Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our next guest will be Alan Dunn, the former Assistant Secretary of Commerce. We're having some phone adventures here at KPCW this morning because we had him, but now we lost him. I expect we'll have him back in just a minute. Alan has been on this show before, and somehow I suspect that to the extent he's willing, we'll probably have him back again because this seems like a time when trade issues are pretty volatile in this country.
I think we're all hoping it'll quiet down, but I suspect it's going to get louder before that happens.
Is he back?
And I understand we've got Alan on the phone. Alan, welcome to Mountain Money. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So Roger mentioned in the open, you know, one of his observations, and we're not experts on trade policy, but from our vantage point, it seems like this is the first time that a tariff is being used to accomplish a non-trade type goal. Is that correct?
It's close to correct. We impose sanctions using the same authority on a number of occasions that were trade sanctions as opposed to this sort of blanket tariff thing, but it's very similar in the application.
Alan, let's take a step back and give our readers, for those who aren't following the news so closely, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with Mexico and, you know, what the current state of play is, and then we'll plunge back into what it means.
Well, if you'd asked me that question on Thursday, I'd say things are going pretty well with Mexico, except for this immigration issue. The trade has picked up more than I had predicted when we last spoke. I think I said it was about a 5% improvement when we last spoke about the new NAFTA 2 or the USMCA, and it's actually been better than that. For the first 3 months of this year, trade with Mexico has actually exceeded trade with China for a change, and it has long been our second largest trading partner and just moved into first place in the first quarter of this year. So I'd say on the whole, things are going well. We had a lot of cooperation with them on security matters and a lot of cooperation on economic matters, including in the always difficult area of crude oil, because Pemex had been unwilling to trade with the U.S. for a long time, but we now import quite a bit of the heavy crude that our refineries need from Mexico directly.
And the president has proposed the new tariff structure that the president has proposed, and when would it phase in?
Well, so far we're just dealing with a tweet, which doesn't carry quite the same legal force as a Federal Register notice, but he has said that it's a 5% starting next week, June 10, pretty rapid implementation plan, faster than any I've ever seen, and ramping up by 5 more percentage points every month until October, when it would reach 25%, unless some unspecified goals are met with regard to the immigration issue.
Before we get to the sort of economics of this, let me ask you a hyper-technical question, which is, as a former bureaucrat, could something be implemented that fast? Are there like, you know, federal notice requirements or anything like that that he would have to go through?
There are federal notice requirements, but under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, he can put all of those notice requirements aside and impose it effectively immediately. However, whether you can get the Customs Service to actually act that fast and impose those tariffs, and all the necessary drafting done by June 10, that would be, in my experience, an extremely heavy lift.
So, Alan, take us behind the scenes. As we mentioned in the open, you were formerly the Deputy Secretary of Commerce. How are decisions like this typically made? Is it a several-month process with various constituents in the room, and you're talking about the pros and cons and trying to come up with a long-term strategy? Or what typically happens?
Yeah, this act is usually based, the action under this act is usually taken by the Treasury Department and the State Department. The Commerce Department gets into it only occasionally. So those interagency meetings typically will go on 4 months before an action is discovered under, you know, planned action under the AIPA is discovered by the public generally. And there usually is a notice that says it's going to, if it's in the case of an actual security emergency or going after, say, terrorists, for example, where this act is most actively used, it may be implemented immediately upon the release of the notice. But more often it's done with 30 days notice after months of planning.
And is it, do these tariffs typically stay in place for years, or are they typically used as a tactic and a strategy with the hope that it's going to be short term and it's going to bring the other party to the negotiating table?
So we've seen tariffs imposed under the Section 232 National Security Clause against China and others in the world here recently by the what I'm now calling the tariff, the tweet tariffs, as opposed to the normal tariffs. And they appear to be very much a negotiating tool as opposed to something that gets set in place for long-term planning. And that's one of the problems with them, of course, because, as you know, capital is a coward, and the thing it fears most is uncertainty. And, you know, whipping tariffs on and off based upon a negotiation is a very uncertain affair, and it scares the hell out of investors.
And how is it? To what extent is this approach inconsistent with NAFTA or the USMCA, which, by the way, always sounds to me like a Village People song?
Yeah, funny. I thought it was the U.S. Marine Corps when I first saw it. It's not legally inconsistent with either the original NAFTA or the new USMCA. It is, however, directly contrary to our WTO obligations. But the U.S. has also put a sort of a halt on the dispute settlement mechanism under the WTO by refusing to appoint new judges until we get an agreement on the drifting standard of review that the WTO appellate body had been engaging in.
Let's talk about what would happen, leave aside the sort of process by which we would get to a 5% tariff. Let's talk a little bit about the implications of a 5% tariff. In terms of the economic and trading relationships between Mexico and the U.S., what's it likely to impact?
Well, it's going to be huge. If it is, in fact, implemented, whether on June 10 or any time shortly thereafter, we're talking about a $350 billion dollar a year trading relationship in goods alone with Mexico. And the hint in the tweet was that it would be all imports. So that's, you know, we're talking about an awful lot of money here, even at a 5% level. At a 25% level, it's basically a prohibitive tax on the U.S. consumers of those goods.
And give us an update on China. You know, we had you on, I think it was probably about 2 months ago. There was a lot of positive news that was coming out. It seemed like, at least from the outside, as a student of the market, as somebody that likes to follow the news, it was seeming to me like we were close to getting an agreement, and then it fell apart. Any behind-the-scenes info on that? Were you surprised to hear that there was what many people perceived to be a last-minute hiccup on getting that deal closed?
Actually, my experience in negotiations with most of the Asian countries is that just as you get to the point we were about to sign, someone throws a last-minute wrench into the works to try and get a little bit more, and you have to go through another few days, weeks, or even on occasion months of negotiation to bring it to the table. So I was not surprised by this hiccup. And in fact, the Chinese have already moderated their fairly strong rhetoric, and have indicated they're coming back to the table to meet with the U.S. beginning at the G20 meetings this coming weekend. So I still have a hope that the Chinese issue can be resolved by the people who genuinely want to resolve it, because it too is a potentially prohibitive tariff on to be picked up by the U.S. consumers.
So is it your thought that we may very well see a deal by the end of the summer, or for or maybe by the end of the year, if not that?
I think probably by September is a reasonable estimate for a solution of the China deal. I have immense respect for the negotiators, and they seem to be getting an awful lot of support and leeway from the administration right now to work those things out. My bet is still on the goodwill of the negotiators on both sides.
I eventually want to come back to Mexico, but while we're in China, what is the pressure that is being put on China? In other words, what is it that we can say to them that actually causes them to want to do this deal? I'm trying to understand what the negotiating points on each side are.
So it's important to understand that one of the strongest single things that the U.S. has by way of influence in the world is we have this gigantic integrated open market. And access to this market is highly, highly desirable for anybody who's a trading nation. Of course, China is focused on as an export-driven economy, and that puts them in a position of being especially sensitive to the access to our market. And now that access can be used too aggressively in a harmful fashion, or it can be used aggressively to force reciprocal access or other things. Typically, it's trade for trade. Now, of course, we're seeing trade for immigration type things with Mexico, and to a certain extent, we're seeing security issues and IP protection issues with China that are related to trade, but not squarely in the same, you know, access to my market for access to your market type of trade for trade swap.
Ellen, earlier you shared a quote, and I don't know who to attribute it to, but I like it, where you talked about capital being a coward. The market is also a coward and hates the same thing, which is uncertainty. Does having a president whose strategy might be classified as unpredictable, does that help in negotiations, or does that hurt us more than it helps us?
Well, yeah, that'd be an interesting analysis to try and do, you know, whether it helps more than it hurts, but it certainly shakes things up. I get the impression that, you know, we have a man who's discovered that he can use tariffs to get everybody's to actually seize aggressively people's attention. And it's like a guy with, you know, with only a hammer in his hand. Every problem looks like a nail. And so he's throwing tariffs at all kinds of things, if only to get people's attention and, you know, get serious negotiations started. But I think that it does do long-term harm. And as an example of that, I'll point out that both President Putin and Xi Jinping are going all over the world right now chanting the same song that America is unreliable. Unreliable as a partner, don't trust them. And that's what they say to the Europeans and the Middle Easterners and the South Asians and the East Asians. And they're chanting that all over the world because of this whipsaw-type behavior on tariffs.
I mentioned, Alan, that I wanted to go back to Mexico only because it strikes me that the cumbersome nature of an across-the-board 5% tariff would be really kind of extraordinary. If I buy a vehicle that's made in Tennessee and it's got a bunch of Mexican parts, aren't we going to have a lot of back-and-forth transactions, each of which is going to get a tariff slapped on it as they're building that car?
You make an excellent point. In fact, unless a vehicle is being assembled in a foreign trade zone in the United States, talk about a technical, exotic bit of law. I used to run the Foreign Trade Zone Board as well under my Commerce Authority. Every time that part or, you know, it gets put into a component and then the component goes back across the border and the component comes back as part of a bigger set of components in an assembly or subassembly, and every time it crosses the border, it gets taxed again. So that's kind of a crazy situation. Given long-term opportunities, businesses will form foreign trade zones and they will do assemblies and those things, and they'll be able to mitigate, not eliminate, those tariffs. But you can't do that on Friday and, you know, a week from expect everybody to have, you know, new legal structures in place and hiring new thousands of employees for new plants that you're building in FTZs. That just won't work.
You know, it's interesting to me from a political perspective, just as some of the impact of the tariffs hit soybean farmers in Midwestern farming states, I would think that this particular kind of a tariff would really have a heavy impact on car building manufacturers in South Carolina, in Alabama, and in the Rust Belt, which I would think would be disadvantageous politically for the president. It's interesting that he's made this choice.
Almost 50% of the GMC vehicles built in Texas plants are Mexico content, so you can just basically assign whatever the tariff is to 50% of the value of those cars made in all those plants in Texas. And we are looking at a U.S. auto industry alone, the largest single component of our trade with Mexico, I should underscore. It's almost a third of the total trade if you look at autos and auto parts. That's around 10 million U.S. jobs that would be impacted. In some cases, the most profitable components or elements of the auto trade, like the large pickup trucks and SUVs and things like that. It has a huge economic effect on the U.S. companies, U.S. plants, and all of the above. And as you know, the auto market's gone a little soft lately.
So Alan, we're getting close to the end, but I know Doug has another question or two, but I wanted to ask your prediction as to what's going to happen. I mean, we have our prognosticator here. We've got this situation that it's hard to believe we're going to see 5, 10, 15, and 25% tariffs. But recognizing we live in an unpredictable world, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, you're right. I've dusted off my Twitter account so I can get better at this thing and try and figure out what it's all about. I actually do not believe that these tariffs will be implemented in anything like that level or that time frame. But it's clearly brought the Mexicans to the table to talk about mutual solution on immigration. And I think that there are things they can do in that regard that would make everybody happier, both them. I mean, they don't like to have caravans of people pouring through their country any more than we like to have them arriving in our doorstep. So I expect that there will be some way to find progress there. But in the meantime, this sort of Damocles will hang over our head.
We've been speaking with the former Deputy Secretary of Commerce, Alan Dunn. Alan, we spoke to you a couple months ago. We appreciate you being on the line with us again today. Hopefully we can have you back again in the future.
And hopefully with a happy result.
Absolutely. Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Mountain Money.